From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's hour of old-time radio with an episode of X-1, by far the best of the science fiction radio series to emerge from the 1950s, enjoying a nearly three-year run on NBC from April of 1955 through January of 1958. Early on, many of the stories broadcast on X-1 were recreations of stories broadcast on an earlier NBC sci-fi series, Dimension X. Such will be the case with the episode we have for you now. Program number 33 in the series, from January 11th, 1956, it's Time and Time Again.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents Tonight's story, Time and Time Again, by H. Beam Piper. It happened during a routine skirmish in the Great War. Patrols advanced from the defense perimeter under jet cover and preceded by napalm throwers. The enemy defended in depth and mopped up with guided 98s fired from 40 miles to the rear. The blast area was 10 miles in circumference, and the medics didn't find much to pick up over 500 yards in.
Come on. All right, now back it in here. Look out, it's lousy with mud. More. Now, cut left. More, hold it. Stretches. Coming up.
Come on, Travers, get those men out.
Yes, sir, get a move on, line them up. Come on. Easy, you want to kill them. Okay, take it away.
Left those Joes where they was. Half of them won't last till the plane comes.
As long as they're alive, they'll be treated. Get those tags out, Travis. Start taking names.
Yes, sir. This one must have been 1,000 yards in.
Get his dog tag out.
What a mess. Here. Hartley Allen, Captain G5 Camry, search AN-73D. Number SO-23869-403-J.
Hartley?
Allen Hartley.
Oh, that must be the Hartley that wrote Children of the Mist and Conker's Road.
Never heard of him. Major, I think maybe he's partly conscious. Had I better give him another shot?
Go ahead, Sergeant. There isn't much else we can do for him. It's a rotten shame.
Yeah, ain't it always? Okay, Captain, let me have that arm. There.
Oh, God. Down.
Get up, Alan. Can't stay in bed all day.
I remember that. Clear as if it were real.
Up and at him. Hit the deck.
Remarkably vivid. Strange.
Alan, are you all right?
I'm all right. What's wrong with my voice? It's too high.
What are you doing? Practicing singing?
My voice has changed.
Is that all? You're growing up. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday?
Hey, wake up, son. Wake up.
I am awake. It's impossible. I am awake.
Well, the way you slept through that alarm, I'd say it was impossible. Come on, out of bed.
I don't understand.
You went to bed at a decent hour. You could wake up the next morning. Come on, son. Breakfast waiting. Out of bed or I'll turn it over.
All right. It's a dream.
Maybe, but you're wide awake now.
I am. I'm awake.
Well, half awake anyway.
That's the bell at St. Boniface, isn't it? What day is it?
Are you kidding? You forget today's your birthday?
No, I didn't forget.
Neither did I. Here, son. Happy 13th birthday. You won't guess what's in here.
A rifle. A light 22 rifle.
Oh, now how did you know that?
I remembered.
Did I spill the beans sometime? Oh, I could have sworn it would be a surprise. Well, go on. Open it. You like it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect, Dad.
We'll have to lay down rules about using it. And I'll have to teach you how to operate it. I don't believe in letting a boy handle a gun until he really knows how. If I let you play with that thing before I teach you about guns, you'd blow your head off.
I suppose so.
I'll be shaving, Alan. Come down to breakfast when you're ready. Well, it's a big day today. You're almost a man.
Almost.
You're still groggy. Snap out of it, Alan.
I will. There's a dream in it somewhere, but I'm not sure which.
What?
Never mind, Dad. I'll be right down for breakfast.
What you gonna do today, son?
I want to do some reading this morning,
I guess. That's always a good thing to do. After breakfast, suppose you take a walk down to the station and get me a Times.
Didn't it come?
What, the Times? Well, they don't deliver. Be a good idea, though. Maybe I'll talk to Sam Ashburn about it. Here's a half dollar, Alan. Get anything you want for yourself out of the change.
Thanks, Dad.
Finish your milk before you go.
Sure, Dad. Thanks for the money.
You're big enough to handle it now. Hurry back. I'd like to finish the crossword puzzle before lunch.
Here you are, Alan. One Times. Tell your father the puzzle's a stinker this week.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Ashburn.
Look out for the trucks when you cross the highway.
I'll go across Elton's lot. It's a shortcut.
Elton's? You'll have a hard time crossing there, son. There's four buildings on that block.
I thought they burned down.
Well, I've seen them this morning, big as life.
I guess that didn't happen yet.
What'd you say?
Nothing, Mr. Ashburn. I was just muttering.
My days, youngsters talked up.
Yes, sir. Bye, Mr. Ashburn. Monday, August 6th, 1945. Okinawa 1, bombing Japan.
Hey, Alan. Huh? Alan, wait up.
Hey, Larry Morton. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Al. You going to Sunday school?
No, I have some things I want to do at home.
Oh, get him. Fancy pants talk. Things I want to do at home.
Oh, go chase yourself around the block.
Go jump in a garbage can.
Go take a flying jet to the moon.
Hey, that's a new one. Flying jet to the moon. You thought up a new one, Al.
Yeah.
I wish I could stay home from Sunday school when I wanted to. How about us going swimming at the canoe club after?
Oh, I wish I could. I gotta stay home. We're expecting company. A couple of aunts of mine. Dad wants me to stay home when they come.
Aunts are a pain.
Nothing I can do.
You see the football movie at the Grand? Boy, what a team. Notre Dame.
I thought you'd like Cornell.
Cornell? They couldn't beat Vassar.
Well, you're gonna go to Cornell, aren't you?
Me, Cornell? Fat chance.
I'll bet you do.
I wouldn't take your money.
Well, I know you wouldn't, but you'll go to Cornell, all right.
Ha, Cornell. Far above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell.
Just the same, you'll go to Cornell. Hey, Larry, I gotta go.
Well, so long, Al. I'll see you.
So long, Larry. See you.
I'm stuck in this corner. Seven-letter word, a mix in proportion.
Titroid.
Huh? Titroid. T-I. It fits. Now how did you know that, Alan?
That? Well, I read it somewhere, I guess.
Oh. What you reading now? Tarzan again?
No, not Tarzan.
It's refreshing to see you with a book. Sometimes I think I ought to forbid comic books in the house.
Yeah, they must be raising the devil with those bombing raids in Japan.
How long do you think the war in Japan will last, Dad?
I'd say to the middle of 1946. They'll have to invade those islands foot by foot.
I don't think so, Dad. I wouldn't be surprised if the war was over very suddenly.
How? By magic? There isn't a thing on earth will make those Japanese surrender. You expect somebody to make a pass and it'll be all over by this afternoon?
Something like that.
Wish it could. A lot of boys dead in the invasion of Japan.
Mr. Hartley, excuse me, please.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gutchell.
That's Frank Gutchell, Dad?
That's right.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to disturb you, Mr. Hartley.
It's all right. Lovely day, isn't it, Mr. Gutchell?
Mr. Hartley, the Lord's Day is always beautiful.
Of course, Mr. Gutchell.
Mr. Hartley, I wonder if you could lend me a gun and some bullets. My little dog's been hurt, and it's been suffering something terrible.
Oh, that's too bad.
I want a gun to put the poor thing out of its pain.
Of course. How would a 20-gauge shotgun do? You wouldn't want anything heavy.
I was hoping you'd let me have a little gun. Maybe, so big.
Pistol?
So I could put it in my pocket. It wouldn't look right to carry a hunting gun on the Lord's Day, and people wouldn't understand that it was for a work of mercy.
Of course, I understand. You're a very religious man.
The whole world is evil, Mr. Hartley.
Yeah, sometimes it certainly looks like it. Well, I have a Colt 38 special from the auxiliary police outfit.
Well, that's fine.
Now, you've got to bring it right back, Mr. Gutchell. I might be called out. Now, you'll have to promise to get it right back.
Dad, wait a minute. I just remembered.
Remembered what?
Well, aren't there some cartridges left for the Luger? Then you wouldn't be without the Colt.
That's right. I have got a German automatic I could let you have. That way I wouldn't get stuck. You'd have to return it promptly, though.
Oh, wait, Dad, I'll get it. I know where the cartridges are.
Be careful, son. Well, Mr. Gutchell, it sure turned out nice after all that.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Blake Hartley. Frank Gutchell, who lives on Campbell Street, has just borrowed a gun from me, ostensibly to shoot a dog.
What?
No, he has no dog. He intends shooting his wife. Now, listen, he'll walk home. If you hurry, you can get a man there on time.
What?
No, but I wish you'd get my pistol back to me. It's from the First World War. All right, then you'll take care of it. Goodbye.
There you are. What kept you, Alan?
Well, I couldn't find the cartridges at first. I'll show Mr. Gutchell how it works. It's all loaded, ready to shoot. This is the safety. Just push it forward and up. There are 8 shots in it.
Did you load the chamber, Alan?
Sure. It's on safe now. You understand how it works, Mr. Gutchell?
Oh, yes. Yes, I understand. Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Thank you, Sonny. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gutchell. Return the gun when you're done.
Yes, I'll be done with it soon. Goodbye.
Alan. You shouldn't have loaded that gun.
I guess it's all over now. I had to keep you from fooling with it. I didn't want you to see I took out the firing pin.
You what?
Gutchell didn't want that gun to shoot a dog. He's a fanatic. He sees visions, hears voices. The voices probably put him up to this. Well, I'll submit that any man who holds intimate conversations with disembodied spirits isn't to be trusted with a gun.
What are you talking about?
While I was at it, I called the police upstairs. I put a handkerchief over my mouth and told them I was you.
You? Well, why did you have to do that?
I couldn't have told them this is little Alan Hartley, 13 years old.
And suppose he really wants to shoot a dog. What kind of a mess will I be in then?
No mess. If I'm wrong, which I'm not, I'll take the rap for it. Dumb kid trick, you know. But if I'm right, you'll have to front for me. You give me a lot of cheap boy hero publicity, which I don't want.
This is crazy, Alan. This is absolutely crazy.
Maybe. We'll have the complete returns in 20 minutes.
Mr. Hartley?
Mr. Blake Hartley?
That's right.
I'm Detective Sergeant Kaborski from Homicide. Here's your Luger.
Thank you.
I don't know how you spotted that guy, but when we busted in, he was pointing that gun at his wife and swearing a blue streak because it wouldn't go off.
I'm glad I was able to help.
You know, they may even have some kind of a citation for you, Mr. Hartley.
I don't think that's necessary.
In the department, we figure a little publicity never hurt nobody. Even a lawyer, huh?
I really would prefer it if it were kept quiet.
Well, Whatever you say. We'll want you to drop around in the morning for a statement.
I'll be glad to.
Well, goodbye. Goodbye, Sonny.
Goodbye, Sergeant.
Why don't you take the citation, Dad?
Well, you were right. You saved that woman's life. Now, let's see you put back the firing pin.
Sure. Here.
All right, Alan. Suppose we have a little talk.
But I explained everything.
You did not. Yesterday, you wouldn't even have known how to take this pistol apart. Today, you've been using language and expressing ideas that are outside of everything you've ever known before. Now, I want to know...
I hope you're not toying with the medieval notion of obsession.
What?
Well, you say I'm changed. When did you first notice this?
Well, last night, you were still my little boy. This morning, I don't know. You've been strange all day. There's been something... Alan, what's happened to you?
I wish I could be sure myself, Dad. You see, when I woke this morning, I hadn't the least recollection of anything I'd done yesterday, August 4th, 1945.
Oh, but that's serious.
You don't know how serious. My last memory was lying on a stretcher, injured by a bomb explosion. I was 43 years old, and the year was 1975.
1975? Well, that's right. You'll be 43 in 1975, but a bomb?
Yes, during the siege of Buffalo in the Third World War. I was a captain in G5, Scientific Warfare, General Staff.
Buffalo? You mean Buffalo, New York?
There'd been a transpolar invasion of Canada. I was sent to the front to check on service failures of a new lubricating oil. A week after I got there, Ottawa fell and the retreat started. We made a stand at Buffalo, and that was where I got it. I remember being picked up and getting a narcotic injection. The next thing I knew, I was in bed upstairs, and it was 1945 again. And I was back in my own 13-year-old body.
Oh, Alan, you just had a nightmare to end all nightmares, that's all.
I thought it might be that at first, but I rejected it. It won't fit the facts.
But it's ridiculous, all this Battle of Buffalo stuff. You picked up something listening to the radio. All the commentators have been going on about another war after this one. You've just got an undigested hunk of H.V. Calden born in your subconscious, that's
all. But that isn't everything. I remember 4 years of high school, 4 years at Cornell, 7 years as a reporter on the Philadelphia Record, 3 novels, Children of the Mist, Rose of Death, Conqueror's Road. You think a 13-year-old can dream up all that stuff?
But it's the only possible explanation.
Maybe, but I can speak 5 languages today that I couldn't yesterday. French, German, Chinese, Russian, and a little Spanish. Although I've got a Mexican accent you could cut with a knife.
But how did it happen? Alan, I can't believe it.
All I know is here I am. I've been reading up on time theories. Nobody seems to know much about them. Evidently, time exists parallel as another dimension, and I got kicked backwards along it.
But how?
Oh, it may have been the radiations from the bomb or the narcotic injection, or both together. But the fact remains, I'm here with full knowledge of my future identity.
This is quite a shock, Alan.
But you do believe me, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I must. You seem so strange, as if you weren't my son.
I'm your son, all right. Same body as yesterday. I've just had an educational shortcut.
Wait a minute. If you can remember the next 30 years, suppose you tell me when the war is going to end. This one against the Japs, I mean.
Oh, sure. Well, the Japanese surrender will be announced at exactly 7.01 p.m. on August 14th. That's a week from Tuesday.
A week from Tuesday?
You better make sure we have plenty of grub in the house by then. Everything will be closed up tight till Thursday morning, even the restaurants. I remember we had nothing to eat in the house but some scraps.
A week from Tuesday. That's pretty sudden, isn't it?
Not after today.
What do you mean? What happened today?
Oh, plenty. What time is it, Dad?
That's 11:16.
Is your watch right?
Well, to the seconds, why?
Well, it'll come at exactly 11:17:40.
What'll come?
The radio announcement.
What are you getting at? Something important on the radio? Well, we'll see.
Well, don't bother, Dad. It won't work. I remember we had a tube burned out.
There is something wrong. When is this announcement of yours?
Now I remember it. I memorized it in journalism school in 1954. What time is it?
11:18 o'clock.
We're breaking into the program now. President Truman has just announced that an atomic bomb has been dropped on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima.
The bomb was dropped 16 hours ago, and the announcement was delayed to ascertain the results of the explosion. A man named John Howard Peterson read that announcement from the Washington newsroom with NBC.
I don't believe it.
No? Well, listen.
But...
That's the Burke Platt factory whistle. And the bells of St. Boniface. Now, next, the whistle at the volunteer firehouse.
You like? Then it's true. It's true.
Sure. Then Larry Morton came by on his bicycle.
Hey, Al. Al, you hear? You hear about the bomb? An atomic bomb.
Yeah, we heard.
Boy, atomic bomb. Oh, boy. I gotta go find my pop. He's on the golf course. Bye, Al. Bye, Mr. Hartley.
You knew. You knew about it.
The next bomb hits Nagasaki.
I thought that stuff about atomic energy was so much fantasy. Was that the kind of bomb that got you?
Oh, that was a firecracker to the one that got me. It was a guided 98, exploded 10 miles away.
And that's going to happen in 30 years?
I remember it.
How about... How about me? Oh, wait. Never mind. I don't think I'd better know when I'm going to die.
I couldn't tell you anyway. I had a letter from you just before I left for the front. You were 78 then, and you were still hunting and fishing and flying your own plane.
But another war, and fought on American soil. Oh, Ellen, I wish this hadn't happened to you.
It happened. I remember it. But if I can help it, I'm not going to get killed in any battle of Buffalo.
But if you remember it, if time exists as a parallel dimension, then every tick, we're getting closer to that Third World War.
Dad, you know what I remembered when Gutchall came to borrow that gun?
No, I suppose that you suspected him and warned me.
No, that wasn't it. The first time, when I was really 13, I wasn't home. I'd been swimming at the canoe club with Larry Morton. When I got home about a half an hour from now, I found the house full of cops.
But if the gun didn't fire...
What makes you think it didn't? Gutchall talked the 38 out of you. He went home, shot his wife 4 times in the body, once behind the ear, and used the 6th shot to blow his own brains out.
That's what you remember?
Yes. The cops traced the gun. They took a very poor view of your lending it to him. You never got it back.
But here it is.
Oh, not the way I remember it. But I didn't want you in trouble, so I warned you. Dad, I found out the future can be changed.
One man can't change the whole future.
I stopped a murder and a suicide.
I know, but...
With 30 years to work, I can stop a world war. I'll have the means, too.
The means?
Unlimited wealth and influence. I've got a good memory, Dad. I wrote a list out this afternoon.
Salt, jet pilot, citation, ponder, middle ground. What is this, a code?
Horses. That's a list of Kentucky Derby winners from 1946 to 1970.
Huh? You sure?
Oh, I learned that list on a bet at the Officers Club in Cincinnati in 1971. Assault paid 8-1. You figure out what we can take in.
But gambling.
Oh, this isn't gambling. It's a sure thing. When we get rolling, we'll make the Rockefellers look like pikers.
Assault at 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I could scrape up $5,000. In 10 years, that'll make a lot of money. Any other little thing you have in mind, Ellen?
Well, by 1952, we start building a political organization here in Pennsylvania. In 1960, I think we can elect you president.
President? Isn't that going a little too far?
Well, why not? Who wouldn't vote for a politician who was always right? Besides, that's the one thing we've got to change. In 1960, we had a man in the White House who was good to his wife and sang a nice tenor, and that's about all. He fouled up so completely, we ended up at war. And I think President Hartley might be a little more trusted to take a strong line.
But I don't know anything about international decisions.
I do. I know all the wrong ones. If we can stop one murder, we can stop a war. It's worth a try, isn't it?
I guess so. How do I start?
Well, as I remember, just after the bomb announcement, you got a phone call from the City Fusion Party about the next election.
Well, there's a lot of talk about a reform ticket.
Well, that call is going to be important, Dad. It's the turning point. Now you've got to know. There it is.
Well, what do I do?
Well, answer it. Go ahead.
But...
Don't worry. I'll tell you what to do. Go ahead.
Hello? Yes, this is Blake Hartley. Judge Cribbins. Yes. Just a moment. Alan.
Oh.
He's asking me to run.
Oh, my head.
Alan.
Oh.
Alan, what's the matter?
Oh.
Alan! He passed out. Alan, what do I do now? Alan, listen to me. Alan! Alan, what's the matter?
Captain. Captain Hartley. Captain Hartley.
He was all right, Doctor. I gave him a shot and he was all right.
Well, he's dead. All right, Sergeant. Make out the tag. Hartley Allen. Captain. Dead April 8th, 1975.
Alan, what happened? Alan! Alan! Alan, are you all right?
Hi, Dad.
I've got Judge Crimmins on the phone. What do I tell him?
What?
Alan, are you all right? You passed out.
Sure. I'm all right. Hey, today's my birthday, isn't it? What'd you get for my birthday, huh?
Don't you remember? The Third World War?
What Third World War? Dad, what's the matter? You're looking at me funny.
You don't remember. You're back again, aren't you? Back to 13 years old.
Sure, I'm 13 today, for corn's sake, Dad.
You must have died up there. It was only a mind transfer. That means I'm on my own. I have to do it myself without your help.
Help for what? If it's the grass, I said I'd cut it tomorrow.
No, it's not the grass. I've got to save your life, Alan. I can't let you die that way in 1975.
What are you talking about, Dad? You sound goofy.
I've got to change it all by myself.
Change what?
Never mind, Alan. You don't know yet. Come on, let's have lunch.
Sure, Dad, but how about my present now? What'd you get me for my birthday,
In a minute, son. Go on in.
Okay, well, hurry up, Dad. Huh?
Sure, all right. Now, where did I put that list of horses?
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Time and Time Again, written by H. Beam Piper and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Jack Grimes, Peter Fernandez, Joe DeSantis, Joseph Bell, Clark Gordon, Herm Dinkin, Dick Hamilton, and James Dukas. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
It's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. You are listening to Upstate Radio Theater, program number 1814. We'll conclude the hour with an episode of Crime Classics. This series aired on CBS Radio during 1953 and 54, starring Lou Merrill as Thomas Highland, dramatizing true crime stories from the actual written accounts of every land and every time. This broadcast, program number 29 in the series, originally aired on January 20th of 1954. Going back to 1857 for this story, Madeline Smith, Maid or Murderess.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That's the way the doorbell sounded at number 14 Pembroke Street in Glasgow, Scotland. That's the way it sounded if a fellow was impatient. If he had just come home from Madeline Smith's house on a March day in 1857 and really wanted in. His name was Pierre-Émile Langelier, and the door was in his way. Why didn't someone answer anyway? Here comes his landlady. She gasped because Pierre was her favorite lodger, and he looked terrible. Awful, standing there in the doorway, swaying, before he fell on his face. Dead. Tonight, my report to you on Madeline Smith, maid or murderess, which?
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Even in the middle 1800s, Kelvin Grove Park was a place to be reckoned with in Glasgow, in the springtime particularly. A bonny place, a place of greens and merry shouts, where gambled the bekilted young people, or the more serious ones, where they strolled hand in hand toward some magical and shady and secret glen. In a street which paralleled the park, Pembroke Street, there was a red brick house. It was owned by Mary Perry, a woman of 50, who liked imaginative men, young men of elegance and foreign flavor, like her lodger, Pierre-Émile Langelier.
In all my travels the world over, my dear Mademoiselle Perry, I have never seen such a girl. Once in Algiers, perhaps. But that is another story. Temps perdu, temps perdu.
For the last week, you've done nothing but talk about this young lady, Pierre. Oh. Where did you see her today?
Auprès de la docks, where the pond for them is, throwing to them little pieces of bread, and some, more brave than the rest, would swim close to her, and she would make small noises to them, and feed them from her hand. And what else, mademoiselle, you will never guess?
Oh, tell me.
Her name is Madeleine. Madeleine Smith.
Oh, how do you know?
This morning, there was a maid-servant with her, and they became separated for a moment, and I approached the maid-servant.
With that way you have, I'll wager. That thing you do with your moustache.
Well, yes.
Yeah, do it for me.
No, mademoiselle.
Ah, please.
No, mademoiselle.
Oh, s'il vous plaît.
Very well. enough.
And from the maidservant you learned the lady's name?
Yes, and what her father's name is and where she lives.
Oh.
Her father is Monsieur Smith, the architect, a man of wealth and position. I spent the rest of the morning trying to locate his bank.
And did you?
Certainement. He is very wealthy, which makes Madeleine a beautiful young woman with a wealthy father.
Ah, I'm happy for you, Pierre.
Oh, but alas, Madeleine is still to me a stranger.
But you know so well how to...
No, this is a young lady of refinement. I love her very much. If I should do this thing you like me to do and she would laugh at me, I would jump into the duck pond and drown myself forever.
Then how would you meet her?
Will you help me, oh, chère mademoiselle? Will you help me?
Greedy, greedy, greedy. Oh, very well. Here's one for you.
Here now.
Here's some bread. Here you are, you lovelies. Bread for you and you and you. Isn't it a lovely day?
I beg your pardon?
I said, isn't it a lovely day?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
The ducks seem so, frisky today, don't they?
Except Abby. See how she sulks there.
Here, Abby. Here. Oh, sulky duck. Young miss.
Yes?
You come here every day, don't you?
Why, yes.
I watch you from my window from across the street.
Why, whatever for?
Oh, such a young thing, and beautiful you are, which is such a joy to an old lady such as I.
to an... What's the matter? I have a pain. Oh, dear.
Where?
The nasties. They come on me. I think I'll faint.
Oh, my. I'll help you over to the bench. And here, put your arm about my waist and careful now.
Dear ladies, may I be of some assistance?
I have here a home medical advisor of the era. The nasties, also known as the vapors, a sudden attack of malaise, predominantly in the female sex, usually preceding a faint. Symptoms, loud noises in the ears, quickening of the heartbeat, and dizziness. Make patient comfortable and apply smelling salts.
Now, lie down here on the bench, madame, and we will try to make you comfortable. Now, if there were smelling salts...
I have smelling salts.
Oh, how beautiful of you.
What?
Quickly, the smelling salts.
And that's the way they met. Mary Perry inhaling the smelling salts, and the two young folk looking at her, concerned. Then the two young folk looked at each other and became more concerned and trembled a bit. And the symptoms they felt were quickening of the heartbeat, dizziness, and loud noises in the ears. And they did what young folks most always did when they are met in Kelvin Grove Park. Somehow their fingertips met and their hands, and they strolled and they found a shady glen. Miss Perry watched them disappear with a happy tear in her eye. She had done her bit for Pierre. Things went so well between the two young people that a couple of weeks later, this was the state of affairs.
Shh, your mama and papa?
Asleep. Oh. Quickly. Come on in. Careful. Every time you come through this window...
Then why do you not put the lamp in another place?
Shh. Oh, Mimi. Oh, my darling. Love.
Mimi.
We will marry.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, Mimi.
The right way.
Then you've talked to your mama and your papa.
Yes.
And they are happy. They are overjoyed.
No.
But you said...
We can still get married. You have a job and I'll work and...
You? Work? Oh.
What's the matter?
The thought of you at work, stitching and sewing, or at the laundry, with these fingers, these precious little fingers.
Oh, Pierre.
In other words, your mama and your papa...
will disinherit me if I marry you.
I refuse to have you disinherited.
Then we won't get married?
No, somehow...
What?
It is more romantic this way. Letters to each other each day, and the clandestine meeting, and the kisses, and the...
Oh, I know, the hot chocolate.
Oh, yes.
It should be boiling now. I bring it to you.
And that was the romance.
My own beloved, you have just left me. Oh, sweet darling, at this moment my heart and soul burns with love for thee, my own sweet one. Oh, what would I not give at this moment to be your fond wife? I love you with all my heart and soul, sweet love.
To which her lover answered,
my dearest beloved Mimi, since I saw you, I have been wretchedly sad. Think of the consequences if I were never to marry you. What reproaches I should have, Mimi. However, as soon as your papa pledges not to disinherit you, there will be a wedding the likes of which...
And the meetings.
Oh, passe du temps.
And the nourishment.
Oh, Mimi, the hot chocolate of my Mimi is...
Oh, Pierre.
Oh, my darling.
No,
oh.
Listen.
Yes?
We have been meeting like this for 6 months now.
6 months of paradise and bliss and shit.
When will we marry?
Has your father changed his mind?
Today my father introduced me to a young man.
Oh, who will quickly fall in love with you and die in despair for your love. Oh, Mimi.
Wait.
Mimi. Why?
His name is William Minnick, and he is handsome and he is rich.
And?
Oh, Pierre, I do wish we could get married.
And that's the way it's done, Miss Smith. Manipulation. Borrow from one stock to buy the other, and when the other is gone up, then we pay back. You see?
And that is how one becomes rich, Mr. Minnick? Well, is it?
Oh, I suppose so. Oh, Miss Smith.
Careful, careful, you'll fall. Perhaps you'd just better row, Mr. Minnick.
All right. Miss Smith.
Yes? William?
You said William.
Yes, I did.
And may I call you...
Madeline.
Madeline. Madeline.
Yes?
It's 2 months since I've known you.
Yes.
Last night I spoke to your father.
About me.
How dear you are to me. How much I love you.
And what did my father say to you?
That if you'll have me... He would be very happy. Oh, Madeline.
Oh, I don't know. I just don't know.
But you must. These wonderful days together, you've given me hope.
Oh, William.
Aye.
Put the oars down. Now, come here. Kiss me, William. Oh, why, William. That was very nice, William. Very nice indeed.
Madeline. Madeline. Oh, Madeline. Madeline.
Better and better gets your hot chocolate, chérie. My sweetheart, my love.
There is something I must ask you, Pierre.
Yes?
My letters.
I have saved every one.
I want them back.
But why, my pigeon?
Well, I think sometimes of what I've written to you and such outpourings.
But your outpourings are for my eyes alone.
Oh, give them back to me.
No.
But why not?
I will tell you why not, little dove. If you look with love at another man, I will take the letters to your father and prove to him that your love for this another man is a passing thing, and that your love is only for me, your true love, who you will marry as soon as your father puts aside a suitable dowry for you.
I see.
Of course you do.
You are blackmailing me, Pierre.
Oh, love, love, come to me. Kiss me, kiss me. How cool your lips are, love.
Apothecary. I would like 5 ounces of arsenic.
And you know how Pierre liked his hot chocolate.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. This Friday night, Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, will be looking for a killer with purple hands. When a wealthy widow is killed, Mr. Keene uncovers the fact, fatal to her killer, that purple hands will reveal who was guilty. Don't miss CBS Radio's Mr. Keene in action this Friday evening over most of these same stations, taking on the case of murder and the killer with purple hands. And now, once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on Madeline Smith, maid or murderess, which? A few words about arsenic. Its number on the Mendeleev table is 33. Its atomic weight is 74.93, and it has a valence of 3 and 5. It is of a silvery luster, but be careful about exposing it to the air, since it will tarnish readily. It is used widely in glassworks, in making pigments, in calico and indigo printing, and for poisoning animals. Some people eat it. In the Balkans in particular, it is possible to brush shoulders with arsenic eaters. Other people, however, less innocent, use arsenic to poison people. Still other people use arsenic to poison themselves. I would like to remind you that Madeline Smith, a beauty of Glasgow, Scotland, purchased 5 ounces of the stuff from McConnert, the apothecary. But then arsenic was also used for the skin, as a clarifying agent, it is said. Madeline purchased it, went home, had dinner, chatted with her folks, waited for them to sleep, put some hot chocolate to a boil, returned to her room, waited a bit, and opened the window.
Oh, chérie, chérie. Oh,
my darling.
Vraiment?
What?
Truly?
Why, of course you are my darling.
Then what about Monsieur Minor? What endearment did you name him? Guppy? Sweet bun? What? Lovey? Honey pie, ginger snap, what? I have seen you.
Spy.
Because only I am a man in love. Therefore, I am capable of every ruse. What is spying to a man in love?
If you loved me, you'd give me back my letters.
Oh, letters, letters.
Oh, my darling, give them back to me.
If I did, how would I keep my heart warm when you are not near to it? How would I...
Stop it.
Of course. Now, come to me.
No. Pierre.
Yes?
You are cruel.
Cruel and gentle, sane and mad. The prerogatives of a man in love.
Yet you would show those letters to my father.
To your father, to your mother, to the man on the street. Anything to keep you from another.
Pierre.
Yes, little pigeon.
You say that you've seen me with Mr. Minock. How?
I was behind the bush in the park, near the glen that we used to know.
And?
I heard Monsieur Minock ask over and over that you set a marriage date. I heard also your laughing, but I did not hear your saying no.
My father said I might marry him, Pierre.
Then tell your papa you do not wish it. Oh, Madeleine.
Yes.
This morning I read again your letters. Such letters, such warmth, such eagerness, such ardor, such... Is there chocolate, Mimi?
Oh, always. I'll fetch it.
Oh, little pigeon.
Come in, Pierre. Entrez. You're happy.
Oh.
Your Madeline was,
And you?
Me?
The most perfect landlady in the whole world.
Pierre!
Help me. Help me.
What's the matter? You have the nasties. You have...
Miss Perry knelt over Pierre, and she knew right away it wasn't the nasties. His eyes were rolling around, and his mouth was grimacing in wordless pain.
She went for the cologne, dabbed a little on herself, came back, dabbed a little bit on her lodger. A little later, she helped him up the stairs.
Oh, lean on me, Pierre, lean on me.
And helped him to his bed. Miss Perry was never so efficient as when there was a helpless man about. The next morning, Pierre was completely recovered. The next night, he went to visit Madeline in her chambers again, refused to give up the letters again, and had some of that good hot chocolate again, came home to Miss Perry and fell flat on his face again. This time, he was in bed for 3 days. Which brings us to the evening of March 23rd. As he was walking toward his sweetheart's house, Madeline Smith was attending Mr. Minnoch.
Oh, come sit by me, William.
Hmm?
Sit here by me. I wish to talk with you.
Okay.
Oh, dear William, do you love me very much, William?
Okay.
How much?
From here to a star, Father.
Suppose, William...
Hush.
But you must listen.
No. You listen to me. If you're about to tell me about that monsieur, about Pierre Langelier, don't. I have heard whispers, but I deny them with a laugh and a shrug and a... What's that?
The shutter, perhaps. Nothing. I'll see what it is. Oh, and William...
Hello.
There's some chocolate on the kitchen table. Put it on the stove over the fire.
Of course, love.
And wait for me down there.
Chérie!
Quickly, come in.
Oh, I have missed you.
Oh, my darling.
3 days I was in bed and my thoughts of you always, dearest Mimi.
I know your thoughts fled to me and caressed me and warmed me.
Vraiment?
Truly.
Oh, was there ever a love such as ours?
Never.
And eventually...
What?
We will marry. Did you know that?
Do you truly think so?
Whoa, what manner of man would I be? This tapping upon the window, this stepping over the casement to your arms. Of course we will marry someday.
Oh?
Of course. For each day, each night that I come here to you and hold you close, I bind you closer to me and there is no escape.
No escape?
None.
Pierre?
Yes?
Haven't you been feeling well?
I said to you I was in bed for 3 days.
Why? From what illness?
Love all over. Twice.
Oh?
Each time I have left you the last 2 times, I have gone to my lodging house and I have sickened.
Oh?
Madeleine, I know just the thing.
Oh?
Hot chocolate.
I'll fetch you some.
Oh, guppy.
Émile Langelier, dead. He was buried Thursday, March 26th, and on Monday, the 30th...
Look at those letters, sir. I told you she poisoned him. These letters, sir, they were in his room. I was the dear man's landlady, and I demand the police read these letters.
The police read them. On Tuesday, they dug Pierre up again, shipped him to the laboratories, and the skillful men there found 86 grains of arsenic in his body. That same day, Madeline was arrested, charged with 2 counts of attempted murder and 1 count of murder, and brought to trial on the 30th of June. Madeline herself did not testify, but Mr. Minnoch did.
I am a merchant in Glasgow. In the course of the last months, I paid my addresses to Miss Smith, and I have made proposals of marriage to her. She accepted. I knew, of course, that She knew a man named Pierre-Emile Langelier, but I was unaware of an attachment or peculiar intimacy between she and this man. And of the letters this court has read, I...
What of the letters, Mr. Minot?
I don't know what to say. Yes, I do. I'm shocked. I'm deeply shocked.
The trial lasted 9 days. To one charge of attempted murder, Madeline Smith was found not guilty. To the other charge of attempted murder, the verdict brought in was not proven. To the charge of murder, the verdict not proven.
I want to congratulate you, Madeline, on your acquittal.
Oh, now we can be wed.
Oh, no. I'm off to India.
However, she did get married twice, and she came to America. She lived till she was 90 years old. An amazing thing, her complexion, always clear and youthful. She was a frequent sight at the drug counters, a big buyer of arsenic, wherever she was. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Madeline Smith, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed by Bernard Herrmann and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. And the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Betty Harford was heard as Madeline, Florence Walcott as Mary, John Daner as Pierre, and William Johnstone as Minnock. Gil Warren speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland. Next week, the state of Vermont. In those years from 1812 to 1820, the hills were green and filled with the little people, and it was worth your life to be caught with them. My report to you will be on The Bourne Brothers and the Hangman, a study in Nip and Tuck. Thank you. Good night. About 58 million of us will have to file our income tax returns to Uncle Sam's Collectors of Internal Revenue by March 15th. Taxpayers entitled to refunds will get them sooner by filing early. Every citizen, regardless of age, with 1953 income of $600 or more must file a return. Returns should be complete and accurate, signed by taxpayers. Joint returns signed by both husband and wife. File your federal income tax return early. Assistance is free at any collector's office. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
And with that episode of Crime Classics, we've come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I hope you enjoyed my selections. Please join me again when you can for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.